Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Benyart, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number, 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. Glad to hear Sean Hannity today was agreeing with the position we took on the show last night that Israel was thoroughly justified in bombing that apartment house where the leader of Hamas, one of the world's leading terrorists, was at home, and they killed him. But also they killed the bomb, the smart bomb, a one-ton laser-guided smart bomb that was dropped from an American-built F-16 fighter jet. Also killed his wife, three of his children, and then others, including some other women and children. And Israel has been condemned, I think, by every nation in the world. And George W. Bush has joined in, and it's tragic that he did not congratulate Israel for killing one of the world's leading terrorists, the military leader of Hamas. I mean, what a favor he did. We're fighting a war on terror. And what a favor Israel did for us. They killed the leader of Hamas. So at any rate, a 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. And we had a call at the end of the show yesterday from a gentleman in Massachusetts. And, well, he was saying that he apparently was disagreeing and wanted to blame Israel not only for this but for a lot. And I sensed that his argument was tainted by racism. That's what I sensed as he was arguing. So at the end of, we ran out of time, and the final accusation he made against Israel, he said that the Jews will not allow a reporter to file a news story out of Israel without them first censoring it, and that all the news stories are censored before they come out of Israel. And obviously, that's inane. That's just absurd. What, CNN allows Ariel Sharon to censor their reports? Come on. I mean, it's just so bizarre. It's just inane. And so when he said it, I said, what was his name? You remember his name? Last caller from yesterday's show? Maybe was it Lee? Lee, from where? Springfield, Mass? Springfield, Massachusetts, was it? And so I gave him the opportunity. I immediately said, I'm going to give you the opportunity to retract that. Oh, it was Lee from Denver, Colorado. Ho-ho! Lee, you thought you were going to get away with something, being mistaken for some Northeastern racist. I gave Lee the opportunity to retract that, his statement that the government of Israel censors every story that journalists report. It's just inane. And we were running out of time. And I said, Lee, you only got a moment here, 10 seconds. We're going to be out of time. Retract that statement. Admit it was wrong so that you can have at least save some credibility with the audience. And he wouldn't retract it. So the way you analyze that is you say, what would make a man who apparently has some IQ, he's apparently, you know, reasonably intelligent, he could keep track of information and analyze it, come to conclusions, discuss his conclusions. Somebody who has some IQ, what would bring him to such a baseless and a mindless statement? And what you conclude is that his thinking, his mind is being clouded by some strong emotional issue. And racism, hatred of people because of their race, that's something that doesn't lead toward clear thinking. It leads toward muddy thinking. So, Lee, if ever you're so inclined, feel free to call into this show, or you could call into Mike Rosen's show on KOA. He's Jewish. And you could apologize for that false information that you gave to the public. Right? Our phone number, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. Now, the economy is really hurting. And as best I can tell, that's why the Republicans in the House are thinking of giving a whopping 4.1% pay increase to federal employees. Because the economy is hurting so terribly, the Republicans in the House are apparently getting ready to increase our annual deficit and our national debt by many, many, many billions of dollars. How many federal employees do we have? Is it a half a million yet? I don't know, about a half a million federal employees. And there's about 100 million households in America. So a half a million would mean one federal employee for every 200 households. So one federal employee for every few blocks or every good-sized apartment building. Man. So anyway, let's raise the... You know, my wife had to go see a government bureaucrat yesterday. And when she came home, she said, I just wish I had a camera to take a picture. This woman was the epitome of a miserable bureaucrat. She just reeked of bureaucracy. And if she couldn't tell you no, whatever it is you want to do, see, a bureaucrat, so many bureaucrats have not much of a self-image. And they live to tell people no. And if they can't tell you no, they feel that they're not important. My son Josiah bought a piece of junk Volkswagen, 1967, that we worked on and off for about a year in the driveway. He bought it from a friend, and we tried to get a title for it. Too many bureaucrats. It couldn't be done. Hey, this is Bob Enyart here, live commercial break. And I'd like to tell you about our Bible study tapes that you can get mailed to you automatically once a month, somewhere around the middle of the month, people get their tapes. And if you sign up, you call us at 1-888-8-ENYART. You sign up, it's $24.95 a month on your credit card automatically. Now, some people who don't have a credit card, they'll send in a check once a month. That's fine, of course. But it's easy. On a credit card, we bill your card once a month. We automatically mail you four tapes. And you start out with tapes that are titled The Plot. And it's an overview of the whole Bible, the plot of the Bible. And then after you get that, you get actually four tapes. And then the next month, you get two more of the same series, The Plot, the overview of the whole Bible. And then you start with something called The Tree. Because all the trouble that the human race has experienced, it all started at the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. What does that mean anyway? The tree of the knowledge of good and evil. What is the knowledge of good and evil? It's not knowing good and knowing evil. Because Adam and Eve were able to know good and to know evil without eating from the tree. They were able to know God, right? You can know God without eating from the tree. And they were able to know evil, too. They could have gotten to know all about the devil without having eaten from the tree. So what is the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? It's fun to learn about the Bible, what God is talking about. So give us a call, 1-888-8-NYART. And you could not only sign up for our audio tapes, our monthly Bible study, but you could get the monthly sermons. We hear wonderful people. We hear wonderful things from people. Just absolute wonderful stuff about the sermons, the Denver Bible Church sermons. And, you know, it's a little awkward to talk about them since I deliver the sermons. It's easier if people were to call in and do the commercials, really, because it's a little awkward. But it's fun to talk about God and God's law and morality the way it should be and public policy and how it all ties into what the Bible teaches. So call and order the sermons. We got an instant message here. The tree, the tree, the tree. Mention the tree. I thought it was that short guy in that. Ze plane. Ze tree. Mention ze tree. That's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Boy, that is fun stuff out of the Bible. At any rate, here's another instant message. People are sending them to kgovlive@aol.com. KGOV, KGovLive at AOL.com. And somebody sent me an email, an instant message, quoting George W. Bush, if you harbor a terrorist, you are a terrorist. And if George W. Bush says that the leader of Hamas, one of the world's most wanted terrorists, should be safe if he's in an apartment building, well, then that sounds like harboring a terrorist. If George W. Bush says that Israel cannot deport terrorists, those who were actively supporting the recent suicide bombings, Bush said Israel can't even deport them. He can't kill the bad guys. He can't kill the bad guys, and he can't deport the bad guys. Sounds like Bush wants Israel to harbor terrorists. Sounds like Bush's policy is one for harboring terrorists. And Bush is the one who said, if you harbor a terrorist, you are a terrorist. And then he had to modify that for Arafat. If you are a terrorist, you are a terrorist. All right, let's go to Goshen, Indiana. Daryl, speak your mind.
Hey, Bob, I just want to echo some of your sentiment on bureaucrats.
Yeah.
Oh, my. I mean, I see it all the time. I have close contact in my work and a lot of other things. Of course, we obviously see it in the news all the time. Mm. But bureaucrats, so often, you know, there's so many layers that's created in the government and also agencies that deal with the government, non-for-profit agencies and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. They just become just like the government.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them don't make much money, so they say, well, I'll wield power.
Right.
I just get my satisfaction from saying no, just like you were saying.
Right, exactly. My son and I, we tried on repeated occasions to get a title for his car. And the rules were so conflicting. You couldn't, you know, you had to bring the car to go have the police inspect the VIN number, but you couldn't bring the car because it didn't have a license plate. And there were about a dozen laws that made it. We eventually gave up after spending, and we spent a few hundred dollars on the effort of trying to get a title for the car.
Oh, my.
Because the title had been lost. It was a piece of junk car that cost $200. Mm. My son spent over $1,000 fixing it up. He got it running. And we gave up. We just had it towed away.
my.
Yeah, what a shame. And you what a lesson to teach a 16-year-old, 17-year-old kid who's working on a car in his dad's driveway, and then just the government insanity bureaucracy.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, Bob, I think you referred to, was it last night when you talked about the Forest Service that was made that ruling to take the flagpole down? Did you talk about that one?
Yeah, in California, there are people who've leased land that they have their vacation cabins on, and one of the cabin owners is a retired U.S. military guy, retired cop, and he's had a flagpole with the U.S. flag flying at his cabin for 23 years, and the Forest Service told him he's got to take it down.
Now, did you catch the detail, though, Bob, that there is no rule against him having that?
Right.
There is no rule.
Right. There's no rule against him having the American flag at his cabin. It's just some bureaucrat said, well, it's not zoned for a flagpole.
It's a middle-level manager who said, well, I didn't give you permission.
Right. He's got zoning to he's got zoning to have a cabin. He's lived there for 23 years, and he's had a flagpole there for 23 years, and some bureaucrat says, well, the zoning doesn't say you can have a flagpole, therefore I'm not going to let you have one.
Right. It's like you read everything into the law that's not there.
Right. You know, the law, in America, the law has become pretty much irrelevant.
Right.
The Constitution is utterly irrelevant, which really doesn't bother me all that much. But the law is irrelevant. It's just, and it always has been, just whatever the judge is expected to do.
Yeah.
That's actually what you have to deal with. It doesn't matter that murdering unborn children is a crime, that it's murder, that it is even against the Constitution. You can't kill people without due process. That means that you have to have them convicted of a capital crime in order to kill them. So abortion is against the Constitution.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter.
You heard what Hillary was saying. Did you hear what she was saying about the activist conservative Supreme Court?
What? Come on!
Seriously. She's speaking, if you go on Drudge Report, there's an article on there about it.
There is?
Yes. And let's see, where was it? I guess it was an Associated Press article.
Yeah.
And she's speaking before a group of, it's called the American Constitution Society. It says law students, lawyers, judges at the, it says liberal American Constitution Society.
Wow.
And she's actually saying that it's the conservatives who are the judicial activists.
That is really hysterical.
Isn't it?
Yeah. But, you know, I'm so disgusted with conservative judges anyway.
Oh, sure.
I mean, what is a conservative judge in America? Do we have any conservative judges on the U.S. Supreme Court? Do we have a single pro-life U.S. Supreme Court justice? Is there one? Maybe somebody could call National Right to Life and ask them, is there one pro-life judge on the U.S. Supreme Court?
Well, they would say yes.
You mean they would lie?
Well,
is there one U.S. Supreme Court justice who has said that a baby has a right to life and the government should not allow anyone to kill an unborn child?
Nope.
There's not one that holds that position.
No. Nope.
All the best we have on the U.S. Supreme Court, the Republican U.S. Supreme Court, is bureaucrats who say you can only kill a baby, an unborn baby, if the procedures are correct, if the legal procedures are correct, so that if Massachusetts or New York, if their local congressmen, if they pass a law saying you could kill babies in New York, just like we had here in Colorado, you can kill babies in Colorado, then the pro-life U.S. Supreme Court justices say, well, then it's legal to kill babies.
Right.
That's about as pro-life as they get. That's not pro-life. That's pro-choice.
Yeah, even those justices who would say they would support laws against all abortions would still not not say that's what the Constitution says, that you have to have it that way.
Well, they say that they'd support, they're just a judge. If
right.
a state votes to legalize abortion, they would support it.
Mm-hmm.
If a state votes to not legalize abortion, they would support it.
But they wouldn't say that for murder.
Well, but they just did, right?
Well,
so if a state votes,
they would refer to as murder.
I guess they would, if they lived in another decade in another country, they would say, if a state votes to kill Jews, I'll support it.
Well, it would seem like it.
If a state votes not to, I'll support it. If a state votes to own blacks, I'll support it. That's the moral level of the conservatives on the U.S. Supreme Court appointed by Republican presidents. There's pretty much no such thing as a Christian judge in our federal court system. And for the most part, throughout our court, there might be one in the country, maybe two.
Well, I think part of the problem, too, is that they, I mean, their minds are shaped by this whole law school process where they are taught certain things about the law and about the role of judges and things like that that aren't even right, that aren't moral. For example, that they should somehow worship the precedent of other Supreme Courts, regardless of how bad they were.
Well, yeah, the whole issue of precedents, that's what our system is based on. Our legal system is not based on the Bible. It's based on English, European English common law, and that's just a snapshot of a dysfunctional legal system in Europe a few hundred years ago. And you've got conservative Christians who worship the notion of English common law as though somehow England was inspired by God to deliver the perfect legal system to the world. It's when you have a system of precedents where judges make rulings and then they become precedents, then that's an unworkable system, because eventually you have thousands of precedents, then 10,000, and then hundreds of thousands, if your country is big enough and survives long enough. And no one could know all that stuff. So a sharp lawyer can look up a few court cases and confuse a stupid judge easily enough that he wins the day. And it has nothing to do with right or wrong. It's just what some other idiot judge said 40 years ago.
Right.
And it also
depends on the lack of the ability of the other attorney to find points for his side.
Yeah, God laid out a criminal justice system in the Bible, a court system. And, you know, it's so he forgot to include the lawyers.
What was he thinking?
I don't know. He forgot to say, oh, and you need a lawyer before you even open your mouth.
Don't answer that question.
Right.
Right.
All right. Hey, Daryl, thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Appreciate the call. God bless you. 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. Remember the Archbishop, the new Archbishop of Canterbury in England, the head of the Anglican Church, just appointed today? Well, he's a big-time pro-homo. Pro-homo, of course, pro-abortion. Oh, and he's against America and our war on terror. He's really against that. Hey, Bob and Yurt Live. This is a commercial break. I want to tell you about some of our videos. We have a video called Divorce and Remarriage, and I hope you don't need it. I hope you don't need it, because when people order that video, we, of course, were concerned that maybe their marriage is in trouble. But quite often people order the video because they have friends or loved ones who are potentially going through a divorce or are going through a divorce or getting remarried. And there's so much confusion about what the Bible says about divorce and remarriage. And so what we did was we put together a video where we include so many verses in the Bible on the topic of divorce and remarriage that are rarely considered, that are almost never discussed. Really fun and interesting things that God says about the subject that's relevant. You know, if God says it, something about divorce and remarriage, you'd think it's relevant. You could, once you see that video, if you jot down the Bible verses and you take the ones that you'll recognize and you'll say, I never knew the Bible said that about divorce or remarriage. You jot those down and then you ask 10 Christians if they ever heard a Bible verse about such and such a topic. They'll say, huh? Why is it? Why is it we're all Christians, all of us who are Christians, and we've been studying the Bible for 40 years, all of us who've studied it for 40 years, and most people know almost nothing about the Bible? Oh, is that frustrating? So divorce and remarriage, you can check that out. Then we've also got Confronting an Atheist. That's a fun video. Teaching, it's a primer on how to talk to someone who doesn't believe in God. You know, a lot of people tell us they get these videos, and as they watch the videos, they take notes, make an outline, how to talk to an atheist. And even if you've got someone, a friend or family member who's not an atheist, they're just not quite sure about God. So you jot down a few arguments, a few pieces of evidence, and you bring it up to them. It's fun. The phone number to order a video is 1-888-8-NYART. That's 1-888-836-9278. And hey, it also helps us keep the show on the air and reach more people. Hey, did God write the law? Did he write the law in sand or in stone? How did he write the law? He wrote the law in stone to get it through our thick heads that the law is not to be amended. It's not to be changed. We're not to have judges inventing precedents that then become law. That's an inherently corrupt system. All right, let's go to the phones in South Bend, Indiana. Jim, speak your mind.
How you doing, Bob?
Doing well, sir.
Really enjoy your program.
Thank you.
I got a friend of mine who's on his second marriage, and the woman he's married to, this is her third marriage.
Mm-hmm.
2 years into it now, he realizes he made a big mistake, and he's now looking to justify a divorce.
What does he mean he made a big mistake? What, did he commit adultery with someone recently?
No, he's been faithful.
Because that would be a big mistake.
Yeah, that would be, absolutely.
So he wants to divorce this woman?
He has no feelings for her. He's not, he just doesn't want to be intimate with her. He just lost all love for her. And
he lost all love for her as though, okay, anyway, none of that sounds very compelling to me.
No. And no. So
it's actually sounds rather pitiful.
It is. It really is.
Love isn't a feeling that comes upon you as though you were an innocent victim and all of a sudden you fell into love.
It's the world's idea of love, infatuation.
Right. That's not the commitment that God talks about.
But he's trying to use Jesus' words in the Gospels about If a man divorces his wife and she remarries, she's committing adultery.
Right, right.
Well, why do you see all these second and third marriages in the Christian world out there today if Jesus said that's wrong?
So, in other words, that's what he's saying, and he's saying, therefore, I have to divorce her?
That's how he's justifying.
Wow, what an argument, huh?
Yeah.
Jesus said don't get a divorce, so I have to divorce my wife because I'm divorced.
Just because I'm our third one.
Yeah, he is an adulterer.
Yeah.
He is.
I really wanted to get your.
He's threatening to divorce his wife because she was previously divorced.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus. Remember, he came across the woman at the well.
Mm-hmm.
She was a Samaritan woman.
Yep.
And he went up to her and he said, basically, after a little bit of small talk, he said, she mentioned her husband and he said, you're not married. You've been married five times and the guy you're shacking up with right now is not even your husband.
Right.
Now, if a Christian said that to a woman today, now, okay, Jesus didn't say shacking up. He said living with,
right,
basically. But if a Christian said to an unbelieving woman today, and she said, oh, I'm going to tell my husband. And if a Christian talk show host said, wait a minute, you don't have a husband. You've had five husbands, and the guy you're living with right now, you're not married to him. A Christian today would be condemned by other Christians as being unloving if he said what Jesus said. So anyway, Jesus said that to this woman, identifying, recognizing that she did have five marriages. Each one came and went. She got married, divorced, married, divorced, married, divorced, married, divorced, married, divorced. Now she's shacking up with a guy and they're not married, so he didn't recognize it as a marriage. In the Bible, God recognizes marriages and divorce. He recognizes them.
Right.
Even if they were done wrongly, it's still a marriage and it's still a divorce. Even if it was unjustified, it's still a divorce.
So if you had reconciled your differences with your first wife, but you're on your third, you're not to divorce the wife you're with now to go back to the
that
first.
That would
one.
Be a despicable sin, and we would not allow him to be a member of our church,
yeah,
or to visit our church if he was going to treat his wife with that kind of disrespect.
Yeah.
And divorce her, break his pledge to her. He's supposed to love her as Christ loved the church, and he's going to use the Bible for his sinful desire to get out of a marriage he wished he hadn't gotten into. So this woman is just somebody he could sleep with her, get what he wants out of her, and then leave her for some religious legalist reason.
Well, I believe you, Bob, and I'm in complete agreement with you. I'm just looking for something that's in Scripture that I can take to him in love and say, you know, listen, brother, I'm concerned about what's going on in your marriage. You're separated right now. Your wife dearly loves you and wants to get back with you, but you're looking for a reason to get out of it.
I would just confront him, and I wouldn't be all that concerned about doing it in love.
Yeah.
I would say you're a creep, and you're trying to use God as your excuse to divorce your wife.
Mm-hmm.
You are a creep.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. He's reading, you know, he's reading the same gospel as I am, and I see what he's talking about. I see where it says that.
Well, the verses, you know, we're trying not to get into a Bible study right now on the show about
right.
divorce and remarriage.
Yeah.
But marriage is a covenant. It's an agreement. It's like a contract between two people to be mutually exclusive of the rest of the world and faithful, committed to life, and to have a physical, intimate relationship for life. That's the agreement. And Jesus said in Matthew 5 and Matthew 19 that divorce and remarriage are sin except for sexual immorality.
Right. So if there was infidelity, then there's a excuse for it.
Right. And sexual immorality is adultery or homosexuality or, you know, all kinds of despicable sexual sins. But it also includes some other things, like abandonment, for example.
Yeah, or physical abuse.
Well, yeah, and that basically becomes abandonment.
Right.
And because in Exodus 21 and 1 Corinthians 7, the Old and New Testament are identical, saying that for abandonment, you can divorce. For abandonment, and that's because abandonment is a form of sexual immorality. And you can't be married if you've been abandoned.
Right.
And so you're no longer under bondage. You can be free. You can remarry.
I didn't know about that one. I knew about the death and the sexual immorality, but I never heard the abandonment one before.
Oh, yeah. It was very clear in first in Exodus 21, right after the Ten Commandments, you got Exodus 21, mm-hmm. and in 1 Corinthians 7. Extremely clear. And we cover those in a bunch of other verses in the Bible that Christians pretty much have never heard of.
Yeah.
Like, let me give you an example.
Okay.
Do you know that in the Old Testament, God said only the Levites and the priest can eat the holy offerings? Remember, the people would bring their sacrifices to the priest to be sacrificed to God. And the animals and the crops that the people brought, they weren't all burned. They were slaughtered. And say, if you brought a lamb as a sacrifice, the fat was burned on the altar, and the priest and the Levites, they would eat the meat.
Right.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, yep.
And let me ask you a question. Okay. Was the priest's wife, was she allowed to eat the holy offerings?
Because they were one.
Yeah,
they were married,
she was
I
allowed
believe
to.
She would.
Right, that's where they got their food from.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have a different job.
Yep.
How about the priest's children? Were they allowed to eat the holy offerings?
Yeah, I believe they were.
Yeah, they were. Now, what if the priest had a daughter and she married a son of another priest? So she married a priest. She could still continue to eat the holy offerings because she married a priest.
Right.
But God says, what if she marries into a tribe that's not the priest? Like she marries a tribe of Benjamin or Judah. Now, it's the daughter of a priest, she's grown up, she's an adult, and she's married to someone who's not a priest. Could she still eat the holy offerings? What do you think?
Well, I think she takes on the mantle of her husband and his family and his tribe.
You're right. So therefore, God says, now she cannot eat the holy offerings.
Right. Yep.
Because they're holy and they're for the priest. And she married outside of the priesthood.
Hmm.
Then God said this, what if she gets a divorce? That's in the Bible.
Yeah, Jim, you got me on that one.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. This video we have, Divorce and Remarriage. It's got
you got a video on that?
Oh, yeah. It's
really?
Called Divorce and Remarriage. It's got a lot of stuff in it on Bible verses, things God said about divorce and remarriage that nobody's ever heard of.
Well, I think I might get that for his sake, and well, maybe for my own, too.
Well, let me ask you to guess, since you're not familiar with it.
Okay.
So God said the priest's daughter can eat the holy offerings unless she marries a man who's not a priest outside of the priestly tribe, then she can no longer eat the holy offerings because those are wholly dedicated to God and to the priesthood and to the priest's family. And God says if she gets a divorce, then, Jim, you fill in the blank. What does God say? And I know you don't know. You have to guess. What does God say if she gets a divorce, can she then eat the holy offerings again?
I'd have to say no.
You'd be wrong.
Really?
Yeah, God said then she could eat the holy offerings again. Isn't that interesting?
Well, wouldn't the divorce be wrong in his eyes? And wouldn't
Hold on. Hey, Bob and Yard here. This is a live commercial break. And now this is an interesting conversation with Jim about divorce and remarriage. And that's just an example. The verse I'm referring to about whether a priest's daughter can eat the holy offerings if she gets a divorce. And we've got this video, Divorce and Remarriage. It's $24.95. Now, our videos, we price them all at either $19.95 or $24.95. And the $24.95 ones, well, they cost more. They're an extra $5. And there's a reason for that. They just pack an extra punch. Either they're more production involved in the video, or they're longer, or they really pack a punch. And that divorce and remarriage, it packs a punch. It's not a fancy video. But you don't have to be fancy to get across what God says about that topic. You can call us at 1-888-8-NYART if you've got questions on that topic. Or we've got a video titled Morality, why God forbids sexual immorality. Boy, that's a painful video. God and the death penalty, New Testament support for capital punishment. That's a fun one. A Bible tour of Israel. Oh, what a video. Bible tour of Israel. Have you ever gone to Israel? If you've gone and you went with a different tour group, not Denver Bible Church, don't get this video. Because you'll watch it and you'll be depressed that you didn't go with us. Because we really have a good time. Well, for one, we beat up our guide. Well, we didn't actually beat up our guide, but we sort of beat up our guide, but not physically. But we have a good time in Israel, and we took a videographer with us, and we videotaped the tour. Now, I don't recall how long that video is, Bible Tour of Israel. It's probably approaching 2 hours long. And we've got in it a video of most of the significant places to go to in Israel to see the evidence for the story of the Bible that has survived for 2,000 years or even more, 3,000 years. So give us a call, 1-888-8-NYART. Check out Bible Tour of Israel, God and the Death Penalty, Morality, Divorce and Remarriage. Hey, we're back. Bob and Yart Live, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. And Jim in South Bend had to go, but just to finish that up, when I've asked Christians, when I've explained to them that scenario where God says if a priest's daughter marries outside of the priestly tribe, she can no longer eat the offerings that were brought to be sacrificed. She can't any longer eat those because she's no longer in the priestly tribe. But then God says, if she gets a divorce, then she could eat the offerings again. If she gets a divorce, she can eat the offerings again. Why would God say that? Well, because it makes total 100% common sense. That's why God said it. But why do almost all Christians get it wrong? First off, I think if I've asked 100 Christians in my life about that passage, I don't think there's been one who was aware that it was there. Not one. Which is just a testimony to the lack of Bible teaching that's prevalent in the church today. And when they don't know the Bible verse exists, when you describe the situation and you say, well, how would God deal with this? They get it absolutely wrong. Just wrong. So, and why is that? How is that? Well, it's because we as Christians, we really don't get it. We don't get God. We don't get the Bible. And we tend to miss it in a big, big way. We don't just get it wrong a little bit. We really blow it. So, hey, that's why the focus of Bob and Yart Live has always been the big picture, the big issues, not the details, the big picture. What are the principles in the Bible upon which a criminal justice system should function? What are the principles in the Bible upon which a government should function? What are the principles upon which marriage, families, a church should function? God established three institutions in the Bible: family, church, and government. God has a lot to say about all three of those. He had a lot to say about marriage and divorce and remarriage. A lot. Christians know very little of it. Let's go to Elkhart, Indiana. This is Indiana night. John, speak your mind.
How you doing, Bob?
Doing great, thanks.
Used to watch you on TV when you were in South Bend. Appreciate you being on the radio.
Thank you, sir.
I have a question for you. It kind of dovetails with some of the callers tonight asking about marriage.
Yeah.
This one doesn't directly correspond to a question about marriage, but rather restoration and forgiveness.
All right.
I can give you a little background. The worship leader at our church had an adulterous affair with a singer who also attended our church.
Mm-hmm.
Both marriages were then divorced,
mm-hmm.
and these two married.
Mm-hmm.
They were appropriately shunned by the people in the church.
Right.
And they have gone on to, believe it or not, minister at another church, which we don't need to comment about that church. I think that kind of speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm.
I had a subsequent conversation with him about everything that transpired, and there were some problems with his children, and that's what initiated the conversation with him. And he said, with all the problems we've had and looking back on everything, I really can't say that I would have done anything any differently. I think I would have done everything
the
same. So to me, that's not a repentant heart.
That's a 1,000% not a repentant heart.
So
that's a defense.
My question is
that's a defense of his adultery, of cheating on his wife.
Exactly.
Right. That's a lack of repentance.
Okay. And the attitude that I had at the time was that this person was, and both of these people actually, I think we're looking to the future and thinking that, well, if we can just get out of our existing marriages, get into this new marriage, certainly no one is going to confront us and say, well, you have to divorce to make this right, which indeed I believe would be true. So they were using time as their weapon,
mm-hmm.
hoping that they would get to a point where we say, well, that's all in the past now, so let's deal with the present. God has forgiven us for what we've done in the past. Can you see the logic in
well, God doesn't forgive you when you do the right thing.
I'm sorry?
God doesn't forgive people for doing the right thing, and he argued that he did the right thing.
That was exactly his argument.
That he would do it again. So obviously, if you say, I would do it again, that means you believe you did the right thing.
And therefore, he has an unrepentant heart.
Yeah, completely unrepentant, and we wouldn't let him attend Denver Bible Church.
Okay.
Now, if he did repent.
Now, what are the fruits of repentance?
Well, sorrow. Sorrow, admission of guilt, admission that what he did was sinful, that it was wrong.
Okay. Can there ever, from a scriptural standpoint, can we ever get to a point where we say, okay, we have restoration here?
Well,
by
restoration,
you mean
that coupled to the church?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, I'm trying to discern between, trying to rightly divide scripturally between forgiveness and restoration, and I see that there are two different elements there.
Well,
am I right?
For example, if there was a child molester who, you know, I once prayed with a child molester to get saved,
mm-hmm.
and it was a pretty despicable person, and he really apparently got saved. But there's no way in the world, if he wanted to start coming to our church, that we would allow him anywhere near kids in any kind of ministry or any kind of unsupervised anything near kids. And we would warn the parents of the church that he was a child molester. And now he's become a Christian. So we wouldn't restore him as though he had never committed that crime. So there would be consequences for his actions that would continue. Now, on something like this, if someone in our church, I'll give you stories that I know have happened at other churches, not at Denver Bible Church, but others nearby.
Okay.
If some guy in the church has an affair, cheats on his wife, you know, it's a family at the church. They have kids. He cheats on his wife, and he, with another woman in the church or just whoever, and he finally divorces his wife and shacks up or marries the other woman. And now he's sorry. He says he's sorry. He's repentant. And he wants to attend the church. We would talk to the wife that he had victimized.
Okay.
And if she felt uncomfortable with him being at the church, we would tell him to find a different church.
Okay. Now, is that approach just a common sense approach, or is that something that you would do because you have a scriptural mandate that instructs you to do something along those lines?
Because that if he's repentant, we would forgive him. But that doesn't mean if a guy has an affair with your wife and he's repentant, you should forgive him. But it doesn't mean you have to take him in as your best friend. The Bible doesn't say that all consequences and ramifications to sin go away as soon as somebody repents. So,
Okay. So
we would, you know, I think some Christians would think that you had to act as though the person had never committed the crime. And we wouldn't think that way.
No, I can see scriptural mandates for appropriate church discipline whereby a person would have to literally work their way back into a position of authority, which they may never get to.
Oh, right.
If they're
back
fully
into
accountable.
Absolutely back into authority. Right. If a pastor commits adultery, then he should step down from the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
He should be kicked out.
Yes.
He should step down. And it is possible over a period of years, not 1 or 2 years, but I think many years, for a pastor then to rebuild his reputation and to restore his family and to get on with his life. Like when you look in the Bible, the Apostle Paul was a murderer. You know, he was a mess.
Right.
And David was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And Moses was messy. Abraham was a mess. Jacob was a mess. You know, most of the great men of the Bible were a mess. So it's not that we discard people for life when they sin, but you can't just sin and then, you know, a grievous sin and then go on like everything is fine.
Right.
This guy's not repentant. He should not even fellowship at a church.
No, he shouldn't. And that's what's been the most difficult part about his efforts to have any restoration of relationships.
Right.
That there are people and his offended wife, the wife he offended by his adulterous affair, is still our church secretary and trying to make ends meet with her two children.
Right. And, you know, it's a real blessing to her to have people who think clearly and say, he has not repented, therefore we have not forgiven him. Because in Luke 17:3, Jesus said, if somebody sins against you, rebuke him, and if he repents, forgive him. So he is not forgiven. We would counsel, if that woman went to Denver Bible Church, we would counsel her, do not forgive him unless he repents.
Well, I guess that's the source of my call then. The source of my question was, I'm willing to forgive him when he has a repentant heart.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily equate to, okay, come on over, bring your current wife for dinner. That's never going to happen.
Yeah, that's a good point. He married the adulteress with whom he broke up two marriages.
Correct.
Yeah, and that should not be treated like everything is just hunky-dory. You know, they both need to show real severe repentance. Thank you, John.
Okay.
Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.